Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
Episode 173 is going to be a very, I don't know if it's going to be a classic Audio Face episode, but it's the bread and butter of what we're all about. We've got packed new singles. We've got three albums to review. We have OK Human by Weezer. I haven't gotten your opinion on that naming yet, but I'm sure we'll get a mouthful in a moment. Pause. Then we have Arlo Parks, and then we have an album from Madlib, which we'll be listening to. Mm-hmm. Should be pretty cool. Collapse and Sunbeams by Arlo Parks and Sound Ancestors by Madlib. And a spattering of news, a lot of news that hasn't been covered a lot in a lot of music media, so it'll be very interesting to talk about. And a really fucking sad thing that we'll get to in a little bit. But yeah, let's jump right in with the single. So this is Driver's License by Olivia Rodrigo. Came out a little bit earlier, actually in the beginning of the month, so we're just getting around to it now, because, you know, January, we get back into things. But yeah, she's the Disney star from, like, whatever is the newest reboot of, like, the Disney Plus Extreme High School Musical Home Edition.
Backflips.
And, like, I don't know, it's interesting because I have, I mean, it's a well-known fact, I'm not a big Disney person, but, like, I haven't paid much attention to the Disney stars rising up since they delivered us, like, Miley Cyrus and that shit. So I'm just starting to see, like, okay, here's how the Disney track is working in the 21st century now. And at least song-wise, you get something that's pretty standard pop, but at least plays with ideas that I think Billie Eilish popularized a lot with having less elements of the song in the song together.
It's not a bad track at all.
Yeah, it's a very, like, kid song about, like, you got your first driver's license, so you're reminded of someone who you, like, dated in the past, blah, blah, feelings, love. I promise we're not jaded. But no, it's actually for what it could have been for, especially he's not jaded, but, like, I promise for what it could have been as a song, it's, like, on the better end of things.
Yeah, it's a decent pop song. Like, there's nothing bad, like, nothing that we can rip apart about it. Her voice is quite good, so go check it out if you like that stuffs.
There's that. There's at least talent to it.
Yes.
Next, we've got All Good by Francis Arevalo. Francis Arevalo, I recommended a super long time ago in an early, like, Audio Face episode music recommendations. I just have, like, these from Vancouver, Canada. Shout out Vancouver, one of the cooler places I've been to in Canada. Also the one place I've been to in Canada. And All Good comes out with Francis Arevalo. He's got a lot of different styles. Sometimes it's a little bit more soul and neo-pop, let's say. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a little bit more of, like, a rappy fun flow like this one. And I really enjoy it.
I like that track a lot. I have no idea who he was. And I like that track. I go, I can dig this. I like the flow of it. It's really fast-paced, but it's fun. Always have you lying up and make it happen now. Feeling awesome, think I'm the common denominator. Uncommonly dominating, often haters often. Soon as I was off hiatus, walking stages to bobbing faces, giving them calm tickets and some odd sensations. Thanks for compliments, but I don't want to get complacent. No competition, cause it ain't a competition. Face it, vis-a-vis see me in first place. Tete-a-tete, be so ahead, forget it. Only credits on your visa statement.
We do a lot of range. Go for pop stars, crate diggers, like we got everything.
We got mumble trap rap.
Yeah, can I just say we picked, like, a curveball of, like a pinball machine genres here. Anyways, this is Last Day In from Kodak Black. We talked last week or the week before maybe about Lil Wayne's kind of, like, I Got Pardoned by Trump song. Was, you know, relatively standard Lil Wayne fare, whatever. This Kodak Black song is a little interesting. He goes in kind of in the beginning saying, like, oh, wow, people do auto-tune all the time. And it's like, okay, Jay-Z. But he does, like, a pretty kind of standard rap, like, no real frills or anything, no much. I told my lawyer, boy, I love you like a daddy. I'ma catch a charge before I let him take advantage of me. I done came home so much, I already know they tired of me. Ran up out of prison, ain't say bye to nobody. I want sushi, did some cool.
Gucci, no more lunch tray, yeah. Had to stop showing everybody where my mama stay, yeah. Trump just freed me, but my favorite president is on the money. All the hate and prejudice has become evident. Time and trying to quit taking trips with the carbon. But I know you niggas won't miss a chance if you can harm me.
Yeah, his voice, I mean,
just like really nasally and whiny and stuff. Even though I really like the track ZZ, which is hilarious because that's Travis Scott and Offset that came out a few years ago.
I didn't even know that one. Or, like, I haven't, like, doing it off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah, no, that one, because I played all the time at my work and stuff. That one I can get on board with because the beat is really good. But this one is just, I don't know, his voice is really nasally in this to me.
It's yeah, just like, I mean, keep in mind, he just got out of the feds. So, like, yeah, exactly, he's got exactly a little bit of nose wiping to do. But, like, I think the main thing, about it is, on the spectrum of when I expected to hate this or like this, I ended up not liking it, but, like, it's a decent thing. He shouts out Trump as being the best president ever, which, like, I'm going to take a lot of political positions on this show, hashtag no politics, but taking my political stances from Kodak Black is not going to be one of them. And he also got pardoned by Trump, so, like, whatever. But
of
yeah,
course, you're going to always bootlick the guy who's going to pardon you, so.
Yeah.
At Robin Hood.
Who knows? Might need Joe Biden for a pardon one day. Now, that'd be a dark day in my life.
Anyways, oh my God, that would be hilarious. I would make you frame that pardon on your wall for the rest of your life, that'd by be the rough way.
And the last one we have is Running by Disclosure and Jesse Ware. This one has got a little bit of a Disclosure history and an audio face history.
So oh my Sean. God. So the Running mix of Disclosure, Jesse Ware's Running mixed by Disclosure. Was a track that I heard way back when they did the W Hotel mix. The infamous W Hotel mix was back-to-back with Scream when it was just fucking debauchery. Feathers, they destroyed the presidential suite of the W Hotel in 2012. They played this mix and it was awesome. It was bumping, but they never released it officially. They played it in different shows and stuff going on. Like, I'm pretty sure they played it when we saw them in 2014. I think they played Running. They played another one, I Lost My Head, which was also really good. There's a couple of tracks that they haven't done, but they've done more like DJ mixes and stuff, which is more the house stuff. But anyways, they released it because they did like a little workout mix on it. And then to a full thing, it's like a time capsule of one of my favorite genres, and it's damn good.
Yeah, I really like
that. It's really,
that.
Really, really good, yeah.
I've
been blasting this shit on repeat for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was one of the... we talked about how I listened to singles. We both listened to singles kind of closer to when we actually record it. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really fun thing to listen to, unfortunately, after the workout today. But it was very... because it's fun to listen, like, yeah, just vibe to. It's kind of, yeah, because it's an older Disclosure song, it's going back from that thing, super I would disregard... Caracol and Disregard Energy. It's like a super old kind of mix.
I mean, they made it in like 2011, so it's almost 10 years, or it is 10 years
old. It's essentially a Settle era kind of track.
Yes, oh, it is, for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's very good. Check it out. You'll like it. You'll also be able to check it out in our upcoming 2021 playlist that we'll be sharing in a little bit once we've got some stuff on there. Sean and I are going to be putting that together, so we'll share it in future episodes. Speaking of things that have to do with AudioFace, you can follow AudioFacePod at AudioFacePod on Twitter or Instagram or youtube.com/AudioFacePod. You can interact with us. You can... recommend us music to listen to so we keep the show kind of flowing with new voices while also we don't miss some like rather obvious things. We've done a better job of getting things over the past couple years, but we are good at it now. And yeah, check us out in all the places. Interact with us in all the places. It helps us grow and we really appreciate it. Also, the show's free, so if you've been listening for a while, you better do it. Anyways, Power Report, the newest episode on the intersection of technology, politics, and power with Edward Onguezo Jr. from Motherboard has gotten a lot of good traction from it. Edward Onguezo Jr. has been very busy on other interviews and shows as well now, so good to see that. And dude's interview was wild, really smart guy talking really about technology.
And like, what is the what happens if we have our own tech companies and stuff, we get rid of the monopolization of tech companies. It was a really interesting conversation.
Yeah,
I liked it.
I'm glad you liked it. So definitely check that out, powerreport.world. is a website you can go to for all the links of that. And of course, thank Dan, it's Friday. If you, for some reason, want more of my voice and face, you can watch me on a Twitch stream, twitch.tv/sourcestream at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific every Friday.
Yeah.
Let's go into news I never wanted to talk about ever. Hyperpop pioneer Sophie Zionic, dead at 34. She died in Athens, Greece, as she was climbing a cliff trying to scale it to see a full moon. And then fell, tragic accident. It's fucking sad, honestly.
She was an artist that Dan really enjoyed, recommended on the podcast. We reviewed her album a few years ago. And it was someone I even brought up last week where I'm starting to now understand hyperpop more and get a more of a feeling about it. It wasn't my cup of tea, but now I'm starting to understand it with like Yonzi and stuff. And it was very upsetting to see that because she produced some of the like best obscure music. She did a couple of tracks with Vince Staples on Big Fish Theory, and that was some of my favorite rap tracks of the past decade.
Yeah,
and it's just so many things where I wanted artists or other people to collaborate with her to get so much different sounds and stuff. I really wanted more rap and trap artists to see if she could produce some stuff for them. And
because what Sophie did was took a lot of, I mean, a lot of articles are saying that she is really became instrumental in what music sounds like today. And I think that's a really good way of putting it. And like for once, not really too much of an understatement, because Sophie's sound was kind of a purposeful, I've always described it as a fuck you to pop.
Oh, it is.
It's pop music, but it's remixed and distorted in a way that sounds a lot more reminiscent of industrial music, the subgenre in electronic. And she's put together a number of different like sounds off of that as it's continued. From she ended up working with Madonna, and I'm forgetting her name, it's so annoying. She ended up working with Madonna and another artist to produce a really big pop song that blew up at a certain point, and then it sort of continued to blossom from there. It was the really great thing was that in addition to doing the electronic sound that she was doing, she was also working with rap artists, pop artists. The thing I was forgetting, it's Bitch I'm Madonna featuring Nicki Minaj. Madonna, that Sophie produced. And so Sophie's popping around producing songs for other artists in addition to doing her own stuff. You have Oil of Every Pearl's Uninsides, which was the thing we reviewed in 2017. Wild, really exploring the more experimental parts of the industrial aspect of that sound. But it just sort of flowed into things, like we said, with Vince Staples in a rap context, with Madonna and Nicki Minaj, with Charlie XCX even. There's so much going on there that influenced it. And now it was like some of the biggest like hits from the last, or like underground hits from the last couple of years, like Injury Reserve or 100 Gex are like a direct relationship to this kind of like hardcore production that is sanded down to almost be like feasible for like regular people's ears. And then tying it into other genres as well. It's just a really amazing kind of run she had that was way cut too soon.
And then probably one of the best like eulogies on Sophie was Vince Staples posting on Twitter. I have a picture of her with in the studio. He did a couple tweets that are kind of on the nose and a little bit of funny to put have some light on all the situation.
Yeah,
it says can't even be sad because Kurt would look at me like I was crazy. Sophie was different. You ain't never seen somebody in the studio smoking a cigarette in a leather bubble jacket just making beats and not saying one word. And don't let the verse be deep or heartfelt because she's stopping the computer and walking outside till you get back on some gangster shit. My favorite one. Sophie walked in the studio unannounced wearing Mickey Mouse ears on the way home from Disneyland with Jimmy Edgar. Like, she has something for you. Played 7:45, took a water bottle and left. I'm a Mr. Homie.
Yeah.
7:45 goes hard.
Yeah, that wasn't a song. That was Jimmy Edgar's production, Jimmy Edgar's, right, rather than Sophie's. But Sophie produced two other songs on Big Fish Theory.
Party People, right?
I think Party People, but definitely the one with Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. And you can definitely hear Sophie's production in that, in Vince Staples' album, which is already very avant-garde and electronic in that way. So it's very sad, especially we talked about the MF Doomer episode earlier, when you have artists who die early, seemingly from causes that are like not self-inflicted, not that those deaths aren't bad, but like those happen all the time. And Also,
on your face before the bodies are cold. Dan sent me, this is the worst of inside baseball here, but Dan sent me, well, at least it wasn't suicide this time. We've got too many of those. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Sad thing is, you're really right, though, because we've had like so many mental health breakdowns of all of so many different artists and stuff. So that was my first thing I saw. I'm like, oh, please, God, no, Sophie, don't do it. I'm like, just crazy accent, especially just because, random shit.
Yeah, and I'm like, especially because there's so much going on in the music world. While Bus Number 173 is continuing to roll over people, Annie also pointed out that she was surprised that it wasn't an overdose. As well, because again, overdoses and suicides and all these different things take a lot of young rap, like young producers and artists and musicians in general. Mm-hmm. And like, we joke about it sometimes, but a lot of it's related to mental health issues, are exacerbated when you're a trans woman, as Sophie was. And so, if those things were the case, you'd definitely feel for her in that way. But like, it's in a different way, very sad that it was accidental. And while she was just like wanting to see the full moon in Athens, Greece, which was very beautiful because there are photos of it and it's really sad to see. But also like it was a death that was like, I guess a little bit more peaceful in that way.
Yeah, or like it's just a freak accident.
Yeah. Freak accident. Probably not peaceful as was happening, but like it's a more innocent kind of way it was happening. Right. You know,
just shit happens.
Yeah. So really hate that. And rest in peace, Sophie. And
like I said, live on with the podcast for sure.
Like we mentioned in the Doom episode, the best artists are the ones who like leave a mark on a bunch of different genres and then like they just go from there. Yep. And so Sophie, again, did that remarkable thing where she had a huge impact on musicians at a very young age, relatively. And while we definitely could have had more Sophie and it would have been great, she lives on very much so in a lot of modern music that we're going to be reviewing over the next couple years. So that's good.
Moving on to our first review.
Yes.
We have OK Human by Weezer. It is 12 songs, 30 minutes long. And
30 minutes too long, I would say.
Damn, I was going to say the same exact thing. Like, 30 minutes too long. Also, don't ever put OK in front of your fucking album title ever unless you are somehow blessed by Tom York himself.
Yeah, you better be, again, to comment on a thing Annie was pointing on, you better be doing some kind of like OK Computer level shift with your sound as a band in order to dare invoke the good Lord's name.
Exactly. Like the good Lord of OK, all caps, human. That's just too close.
Yeah.
And you made this sad boy, wannabe fuckboy Uncle Rocky album thing that is pretty brutal, to be honest.
So Weezer's a band.
Weezer's a band, right? They had some success in the 90s, early 2000s with some decent tracks and stuff for the sound at the time. Nothing spectacular, but Weezer had some decent stuff. And then, like in the mid 2000s, some of their stuff was okay. Then
in the 2010s, long story short, they sucked and then became a meme.
Yeah, they sucked, became a meme. Pacific Jaydream was one of the worst albums we ever reviewed on this podcast. Not Fall Out Boy bad, because that's like Athena pair. But anyways, moving on to OK Human as an album. It starts off with all my favorite songs, and it's just, it's a bunch of 40-year-olds talking about like having angsty teenager feelings, basically.
I love parties, but I don't go. Then I feel bad when I stay home. Cause I need a friend when I take a walk. I like spacing out when somebody talks. I wanna be rich, but I feel guilty. I fall in love with everyone who hates me. All my favorite songs are slow and sad.
And it sounds like the production and everything else sounds like something that people in their teens would write. Or early 20s would write. Not people who've been in a band since the early 90s.
There's definitely a point. The subject matter of the album feels definitely very shallow for a band that has had a long time to ruminate on many different things. But I seem to level with the fact that Rivers Cuomo has, his voice answers the age-old question Patrick Starr asked, is mayonnaise an instrument? Rivers Cuomo has the blandest, widest, most like devoid of like true emotion voice I've ever heard. Like, it looks like if you made Ezra Klein sing.
William Patrick Corgan, as he goes by now apparently, has a better voice than him, and that's saying something, because Billy Corgan's voice is pretty rough. But his voice, at least on the Special Pumpkins album that happened last year, was fine. And they had decent tracks. And they've been out about the same time. But this is just, it's so bland. Everything is trying to be an introspective on yourself in ways. But they did it in an angsty teenager way, which when you're in your freaking 40s, I guess, or late 30s or the 40s, I don't know exactly how they are, but they have to be at this point.
Yeah.
Is not what you do. Because then you sound out to be like a creepy high school uncle or something. So...
More on that never.
More on that never.
F's in the chat. Okay, so you go through all my favorite songs, and like I don't know how like it's one of those. It was the first time since I think that Fall Out Boy album we reviewed about 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago, where 6 seconds into like an alternative rock song, I just like had to pause.
Yeah, that. Me you know, too. I was just sitting there like it's just horrible. The voice, everything on there, it's just. It's very lackluster, very bland. It's just bad. Overall, it's just bad. Stop making music, Weezer. Please, God, stop.
Yeah, I'm like...
And there's a song where it's like, I haven't washed my hair in 3 days. Aren't you bald, bro?
Yeah, playing my piano felt like...
Yeah, playing my piano.
I could never tell where the song in the middle, like, I never felt like kind of on the nose, but not. Like, I can never understand how self-aware Weezer really is. I hope so at some extent, because they've been doing this for such a long time. But again, I expect something that's a little bit more, like, creatively stimulating and not just, like, a rehash of everything they've done. On that tone, like, Grapes of Wrath is the best rehash of everything they've done I've heard from Weezer.
Show support for Winston Smith in 1984. Cause battling Big Brother feels more meaningful than binging zombie hordes.
I think it's like a pretty solid track if you like the Weezer sound and if you've told yourself that you are partial to some way to Rivers Cuomo's voice. It's like tolerable, I think, when he just does... talking.
Well, he does, yeah, exactly. He did this almost like half singing, spoken word type thing, and that's kind of what he would do a while ago, or mix it up with different stuff. But the issue with like the first, like all my favorite songs, which is that was in your ear, in your face, and he can't do that. It's just, it's almost like Neil Young, where Neil Young's voice is terrible, but his songwriting is beautiful.
Yeah.
But you mix that with terrible songwriting, and it just, it's a fucking travesty, as we like to say.
Yep. It's a tragedy.
But there are some decent songs on here. Like Grapes of Wrath is a decent song. What was it? Here Comes the Rain, which is one of the latter songs on there, is decent. So there's like, there are little hints and glitzes of they still have like the production quality stuff of a Uncle Rocky alternative band, which is fine on the ears. But then they go back to being Weezer when they're just bad.
Yeah.
Since I think the last good album, a decent album they had was in 2009 maybe. Raptitude, if I can recall correctly. Yeah, Ratitude.
Yeah, I've never been able to truly make it through any Weezer album, except for that one Danger Mouse project that was a remix of Weezer.
That wasn't Weezer's White Album, it was the Beatles' White Album.
Yeah, thank God. Yeah, because...
The real
White Album. But
The actual White Album, that's not on the nose because the Beatles were like... We want to pose naked on the cover. And they said no. We're like, okay, then we're not going to make an album cover. Literally, that's the whole White Album. That's the White Album. It's beautiful about it. And these dudes are just some random whiteys just standing in front of a cover.
Yeah, it's a really kind of sad album. Like I said, there's some glitzes there. I think Dead Roses, Here Comes the Rain, we're like, okay. But most of this is a skip. Again, I could have liked this being 30 minutes long. But
it's all 30 minutes too long.
All I can take from Weezer at this point is like an EP level of something.
I can take 3 songs max.
Yeah, there you go. I said like an EP, not even a drop, like a damn EP. It is terrible. Speaking of terrible, the arbitrary scale this week is futuristic theology sponsored space weaponry. Of course, all of our arbitrary scales on AudioFace are, many of them are references to news articles, and all of them are meant to highlight the fact that the scale has nothing to do with the review. This has to do with new congresswoman from Georgia, I believe, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah.
who basically said that the Rothschilds, I swear to God, this isn't liberal leftist bullshit where I'm like exaggerating, like calling him a Nazi or whatever. Like, here's pretty much what was said. Marjorie Taylor Greene said the Rothschilds used a space laser to cause the wildfires in California that have been hitting California, I mean, like, for many decades, which might explain the Rothschilds thing. But, like, it's just been, like, happening for a while. And so, like, and again, the Rothschild thing is a reference to long-standing, decades-long Jewish anti-Semitic conspiracies.
So basically, Jewish-based lasers created the California wildfires the past 5 years.
Ladies and gentlemen, your congresswoman from Georgia. As I said on my stream, the dumbest woman currently in politics.
Which is saying something.
Again, the moment Sarah Palin like puts her hat in the ring, lose again.
Exactly.
but like
this. You win some, you lose some. But anyways, so for futuristic theology sponsored space weaponry, this is a solid...
I'm going to say this is a... Zoroastrian spear.
Zoroastrian
spear. Like, you just launch it from space like 10 trillion miles away, and all it does is just like hit asteroids and random other galaxies.
This is a born again third stage rocket booster that's stuck in Earth orbit. It's not even a weapon, but it's going to be a weapon in 50 years when it eventually comes back down and crashes into the church, parking lot, killing a dog.
So that's what they're gonna do with Pat Robertson's body. You shoot it into space, then it crashes down somewhere in Mexico.
Fall out in Vegas.
Good Lord.
Oh Lord Jesus.
New year, same douchebags. It's time for the douchebag corner, and we don't need an intro for that because fuck them. So Trey Songz, first up on the list is Trey Songz, who, according to the Fader, is arrested after a physical altercation with police at a Kansas City Chiefs game. Now taking bets on how long it takes till that's the Kansas City football team.
Deadass.
Anyways, yeah.
Washington football team.
Sounds better.
Sounds so much better, sounds to great. Be honest.
I mean, like, every team in the NFL can't do that.
Obviously. But some of them names are fine. Like, the Chargers are okay. That's fine. That's
some of them should.
Packers is an interesting name, but it works.
You have no idea how much I'd buy a Dominguez Hills Chargers shirt, by the way.
Dominguez Hills Chargers. The Carson Chargers. I really want the Carson Chargers
golf jersey, please.
Oh, my God.
Okay, but yeah, Trey Songz was apparently being heckled by other fans at the AFC Championship game. So Trey Songz did the adult thing to do and went all
and just
meta world peace on them.
And just went Ron and jumped in the crowd, beating him with the shit.
To correct my previous statement and quote Amine, this is meta world peace before the peace came, bitch.
My favorite Amine lines right there. Next up.
Yeah, so he's going to have to deal with that. And now this is a seriously, actually fucked up thing here. And
that's T.I.
That's T.I. The sex trafficker? That's T.I.
Oh, man, this is brutal.
T.I. and his wife, Tiny, are facing numerous allegations. And by numerous, I'm talking Cosby numbers of sex trafficking.
Something popped up on here on the side, just like with... Within the context of it, it was just poorly timed hilariousness.
Because of the fact there hasn't been a lot of media coverage about this, unfortunately, we're using some of the sketchier websites here.
But we need to talk about this shit.
Yeah, but these messages are vetted and exist in their own form. So it's not like we're reporting on hearsay here. So yes, over 15 women, I'm quoting this wrap-up article, over 15 women have come forward accusing the couple of coercing them into comprising sexual situations involving drugs Jesus and Christ. Money. Sabrina Peterson, a former friend of the Harris family who accused T.I. of assault, has compiled a series of messages she received from the alleged abuse victims on Instagram.
Ooh, she got secrets.
We got receipts here. One anonymous woman detailed an incident that took place during the CIAA in Charlotte in 2016. She claimed she went to T.I. and Tiny's hotel suite in the Ritz-Carlton and her phone was confiscated and Molly and cocaine were handed out. Only the people who removed their pants were told to stay.
Holy shit.
Quote, I watched them drag girls back and forth from the bedroom to the bathroom to the living room. She wrote, one girl was crying because she wanted to leave, but they refused to give her a phone to call an Uber. For folks who don't already understand this, we're describing and going into some details of graphic sexual things, so note that. But the woman basically described T.I. as an absolute monster who uses money and power to manipulate people, and Tiny is his secret weapon. And never mind the number of things I could personally go into.
This is fucking Jeffrey Epstein in jail right now, damn.
I was even going to say that. There are so many cases we're now seeing happening out with celebrities in Hollywood, but also in music, where you have men who are grooming women for sexual things in contexts that you don't need to do it in, and women who are sidekicks, who are helping them. They are accomplices in this. And it goes to show how, like, the, like,
this has happened a lot in history.
It goes to show the lengths of misogyny and how it goes to the culture where, like, it's just because, like, you're of one, like, type doesn't mean there's anything. Yeah, but there's a number of different cases here. There's some stuff at the NBA All-Star game where people were pressured for. It is really bad. So T.I. and Tiny have responded. And I'll just go into some context about T.I. and Tiny before we even continue. We talked last year, maybe like, yeah, it was in 2019, so 2 years ago, about Hymengate.
Yep.
Where T.I. made a whole thing about checking his daughter's hymen, like, before she was, like, going out in public or whatever. So being, like, overly sensitive over that. So, like, those should have been, like,
the first
flag, red card, yeah, like, everything going off at once. Like, the entire, like, instrument panel just blinking red, just, like, all the flags all at once. But now you have this, and so when you are going about the he said, she said aspect about things, it's important to look at the preponderance of evidence, that's a legal term, the amount of evidence that exists, and also look at, like, the history and character of these people and, like, when it's happening. In a statement first posted to Complex, T.I. and Tiny issued a denial, writing, quote, "Mr. and Mrs. Harris want to be on the record and, more importantly, want the public to know that they emphatically deny in the strongest way possible the egregiously appalling allegations that have been made against them by Sabrina Peterson. The Harrises have had difficulty with this woman for well over a decade. They are taking this matter very seriously."
Man, it's brutal.
And, like, it's the story winner, all over again.
The winner of the R. Kelly Award goes to...
Yeah, it's like, actually, it's the story all over again. The people pointing this out, the whistleblowers, are the crazy ones. They're the ones with problems that we've been dealing with. So we're going to attack and slander her character. This is only going to begin. Of course, in these cases where people are, like, closely related to each other, there's going to be some kind of, like, dirt that comes up eventually.
Yeah.
It's really rough, but again, goes to, like, the bravery of what Sabrina Peterson and the people who are, like, coming up with this evidence here and putting themselves on the line to point out that this is a pretty fucked up thing that's happening here. Mm-hmm. And as people who consume music and listen to music, there's a lot of good music out there that sounds very similar to T.I. that you just can listen to. You don't have to listen to T.I. You don't have to go to his concerts. You don't have to continue supporting this.
Fuck that guy.
And, like, at a human level, at a certain point, you have to show that you aren't okay with these things, right?
One would hope so.
Yeah, and so, like, that's kind of why we bring these things up. It is really sad.
Moving on.
Yeah.
So, Not a Little Bitch, Tory Lanez, and Not a Little Bitch, Daystar Peterson, and Chris Brown are teaming up for new music, which is interesting because Chris Brown had the whole thing, Not a Little Bitch, Daystar Peterson, was being compared to Chris Brown when the whole thing with Megan Thee Stallion was going on and him shooting her in the foot and then denying it. And
then very similar to Chris Brown
beating the dog shit out of,
like,
Rihanna.
Wasn't me, it was the elevator.
The elevator had some hands, dog. I couldn't fight an elevator. Like, shit.
You know those doors?
Those doors are tough.
It's, Lord, man.
I feel bad for Rihanna.
It's
fucking amen.
I mean, like, again, the funny thing is, you were pointing out here, is that while all those comparisons were being made, Chris Brown was like, literally, quote, "Leave my fucking name out."
Like,
out
please get, like, please don't let me have the same thing with Tory Lanez. And then decides to do some music with him because money.
5 months later.
Yeah.
This is the way the music industry works, and these are the consequences, by the way, when you don't,
held accountable.
As music listeners, yeah, when they're not held accountable, and when you don't, as music listeners, make proper decisions and choose to not idolize these otherwise largely shitty, shitty people.
Stop idolizing false prophets.
Yes. Thankfully, we're out of the douchebag corner and we can move on to other things. Jeez. We have Arlo Parks' debut album, Collapsed in Sunbeams, 12 songs, 40 minutes long. This is good. I'm very happy.
Holy
with this.
Shit. So
genre, what do you want to call this? Because I waffled around with this and I'm very confident with my opinion now.
I honestly don't know, because it's a cross between, there's a lot of elements of indie in this actually, and it's like indie neo-pop in a way. Like, yeah. I don't know what the hell.
I was waffling the same thing. I'm going to call it indie, instrumentation-wise.
Yes, I want an indie because of a song called Black Dog that I saw a lot on Marty Because Eclectic, SiriusXMU, and a bunch of my other indie stuff I listened to. I never heard her before, and I saw Arlo Parks' Black Dog when I listened to it a bit the past few months. I go, this is a really good track. Wonder when she's coming out with the album. Dan puts it on the rundown. I go, oh, shit.
I'm welcome, like, to the podcast.
Like, let me see what happens. Shit.
Yeah, it is equal parts fantastic. Poetic. And lyrical, which is kind of like, if you listen to the Spotify version, then there's a Genius plugin that shows that each song more or less was inspired by a poem.
Yeah.
And so
I love the a part in her, because the Collapse of Sun and Sunbeams is just a short little interlude of a minute of her talking.
I know you can't let go of anything at the moment. Just know it won't hurt so. Won't hurt so much forever. Seeing stars, so stuck on the new J-Paul. Said my clothes are sticking to me, and I can't.
I heard there's a part where she goes, he's stuck talking like a poem about a relationship. He's stuck listening to that new J-Paul. I was like, same though. But just in her thick ass English accent,
yeah.
Which is beautiful. It was hilarious. But it's a gorgeous song, because in the middle of it, you have like a spoken word thing where. That's what I said earlier. Pops in. The production of it's just, it's minimal, but very clean and crisp for indie, which is, again, something I've been noticing more with more and more indie tracks, like Rye that came out last week that we reviewed. His stuff was all pretty clean and crisp and minimal in the instrumentation, which I'm starting to like more in indie now, because indie tends to be pretty raw, emotional, and the production could be kind of all over the place a little bit, depending on the artist, but it's now really becoming more thought out and stuff. The production, everything is taking a little bit longer to make, which I like.
Yeah, this, when I was waffling into it, it really allowed me to enjoy the production. It's alternative, but not even like alternative rock. It has jazzy elements. It has like almost like those open mic night elements where you have those instruments that are soft playing around in the backdrop just for this like poetry that's being thrown down here. You have really nice songs, relatively happy songs about kind of like seeing the light at the end of the tunnel while going through things, or dipping down into dark places and emotions and experiences with people to talk about what you learned about yourself or your other things around that. So it has that sort of like Bishop Nehruvian kind of way of like talking about dark things but having a spin about like making yourself better after it. So that's like a nice thing to see in music.
I'm putting some stuff on the nose and as well.
Yeah.
Too Good and Hope are fantastic tracks. Really shows out her voice. Beautiful voice. Really enjoy it. Like just top to bottom, the entire album is very good. You have two tracks of my favorites are Caroline and Black Dog back to back. Caroline almost reminded me a little bit of some of Haim's earlier work a little bit, just obviously with one singular vocalist, but this beautiful drum beat and slower song with a gorgeous guitar in the background that's looped. I love looped guitars. And then after that, you get to Black Dog, which is definitely my favorite song on the album. I have listened to it a little bit before.
Black dog, go away. Alice, I know that you are trying.
in general, but it's just one of those perfect indie tracks for me where it's just a chill, gorgeous song. You can take it on a drive, have an in, and just, yeah, it's one of my favorite things. And this is the state of indie where it's just, there's so many different artists coming out with awesome music that it's really my favorite genre now. It was always one of my favorite genres, but I tend to like my, you know, my experimental side a little bit more, or experimental, like chill wave or electronic indie more. But now just tried and through indie is really becoming my favorite now because of how much shit's coming out. Thank you, Audioface, for making me listen to it even more than I do.
Yeah, it's good. I like, as we're getting like through the album, you get some really deep and retrospective or introspective love songs throughout here.
Oh, yeah.
But you also get songs that kind of go through a lot of different emotions. Like there's Bluish, for example, which goes through like the idea of being in some kind of relationship where you're not like given enough space, and it gets like kind of
tense and claustrophobic and stuff.
Depending on how you interpret it, it could be like abusive or violent in that way, with like smothered me with fake blood and ginger around your throat. Things like that.
Easy when you call me in the dead of the night. When I say I need some space, I shouldn't have to ask you twice. It's not easy when you call me in the dead of the night. When I say I need some space, I shouldn't have to ask you twice. Shouldn't have to. Shouldn't have to ask you twice. Shouldn't have to.
But it's just, there's so many different lyrical turns and writing like depths in here. Like there's a lot of nuggets in here where I'm going to have to listen to this a lot of times to be able to catch all the cleverness in here.
This is definitely an album I'm going to listen to a bunch of times throughout this year. I already had Black Dog on one of my playlists already, but from before. And now it's a complete album. It just, it's one of those that every time you listen to it, you're going to have something new to that you like. You're going to always pick out something else. Maybe it'll be a lyric, it'll be productions, whatever it is. Something else is going to keep standing out to you every listen through. It's one of those albums that just grows with time, which is rare, honestly. You don't get it too often where you want to really just dive in and keep going and going more with it. So, man, fantastic.
Yeah, it is damn beautiful. Arbitrary Scale this week, definitely listen to this album. Arbitrary Scale this week, a futuristic theology sponsored space weaponry. I'm going to give this the Jehovah's Witness Watchtower because they're actually called the Watchtower Society, and a lot of their literature is even given like a Watchtower thing. So instead of that Watchtower logo, it's going to be one of those like space lasers, but it's on an island somewhere because I think that looks really cool.
This is an LDS Death Star. Because then they have like their own planet or some shit.
Oh, yeah, you get your own planet if you die.
Yeah.
If you get your own planet if you die, if you're good and white.
Yeah, Planet New Greenwich. And a Romney, deadass.
Planet Sheen for the real ones out there.
God. That's rough.
There's some Zoomers out there who've been triggered by that one.
I hope so.
Okay, but yeah, very, very good album. I love to see, especially Black Indie as well. It sounds so soulful, so I was almost like gonna put it in a neo-pop kind of way, but I was like, no, that's the reason I called it neo-pop. I'm trying not to do this. So like, I think the instrumentation especially, it's indie for sure.
It's great.
Yes, damn good. All moving right. on, The Weeknd is on a warpath.
This is one I love this shit.
And yeah, I'm actually on his side here.
100% so, on the side. We've been on this. Abel fucking turned it around for us. Like he was my guilty pleasure. My guilty pleasure fuck boy for a couple songs. But I never really liked him as a person that much or whatnot. But now seeing all the stuff of his album that came out last year, and all the crap that happened with the Grammys, a bunch of other things, it really shows your character what you do with that. And he's just turned it around, honestly. And this is another thing on it. So,
and he's not, and to like kind of tee off what you're about to talk about, he hasn't taken the Grammys snub like on his shoulder. I mean, like people compensate for their feelings, da 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 da, in like different ways, of course, but he's using the Grammy snub as fuel to kind of not really even prove to himself because he's a good artist, because he seems very confident.
But then he's also doing it as an industry in general of saying, look at all of this shit that has been going on and other stuff, and actually being really being more of a freedom fighter and a voice for people and stuff in that regard, which is rare for someone in his stature that's one of the biggest musical artists on the planet, if not the biggest musical artist right now.
Yeah.
But anyways, so he only got he opened up about the Sucker Punch Grammy snub, all the stuff there. But one part I want to talk about was he's going to be doing the Super Bowl halftime show, whenever that Super Bowl thing is, whatever, hand egg sport.
Should be next week.
I think
week.
It's next week or something like that.
Yeah.
But anyways, fake football. So he said that he chipped in $7 million of his own money into the Super Bowl halftime show because he wanted it, and he had a whole vision for it and stuff, and he wanted it to be done in the way that he saw his own vision. So he's like, I'm going to put down my own money on this.
Yeah. So he must have had a really interesting meeting with Jay-Z where he's like, sure, man, if you want to pay for that yourself out of your pocket, then that's fine by me. And and I want you. So the...
I want Booty Warrior Jay-Z as Dan's alter ego. Please make it happen.
We need to start writing down these bits, man.
It's just not going to be like with the Michael Brooks where it's just every random thing. He would just have like an alter ego every once in a while. You need to have like that one. You need to have down. Booty Warrior Jay-Z. Like that's a thing we need.
Yes.
Extreme capitalist Jay-Z. Like we need that. Here we go. Plantation owner Jay-Z. There we go. That's the alter ego.
I'm looking for hemp to invest in order to resell mids as high-tier cannabis. Now we can do this the easy way, or we can do this the hard way.
The choice
is yours. Going back to Abel, and he really summing it up, he gave a really big interview with Billboard where he was talking about the impact that it had on him. And he said he was mostly confused because everyone around me was telling me that this is going to be your year. You're going to do really well at the Grammys. We were saying this. I went back to listen to our review. We were like, this is not just like good for the weekend, which is incredible for the weekend. This is just like a solid piece of art that I was not prepared to listen to. So like he definitely got snubbed. And it's also worth pointing out, since we're talking about the Super Bowl thing really fast, that there was some speculation that because the weekend agreed to do the Super Bowl halftime show instead of the Grammys performance, because the Grammys wanted that to be exclusive to perform at whatever they're not doing. Apparently the snub was for that reason, and we don't know if the Grammys are that political, but we do know they literally don't listen to albums, so like maybe we can't put it past them.
I would not be surprised at all, but it's good on him because he said that we did everything right. Like his whole team did everything right. He made his album. He said, I'm not really a cocky person, but we really felt like this is something that we should have gotten recognition for from the Grammys. I'm like how he's always putting we too, like really shouting out his producers and all other people that helped him with the album. It's not just me.
Yeah.
That's another thing too. I
realized it's a good sign.
So like, shit, man.
The Weeknd suggested that the snub may have been related to race, pointing out that only 10 black musicians have won Album of the Year in the Grammys 61 years. I don't think the Grammys are racist, even though they still have R&B and urban categories.
My favorite thing is the urban category is the worst.
I'm like, world music.
Jesus Christ. That was pretty bad too. the whole thing in general. Yeah, an album.
The more I read this, and also the more I like, we quote unquote ingratiate ourselves in the music industry through doing this podcast and through like other behind the scenes things that should be fun for this podcast soon. Mm-hmm. Like, the more I'm actually on the Weeknd side. I did not expect this going into listening to the album or like
can we get a sit down with Abel? I'm gonna call him Abel the host. It's like, hello, can I call you Abel? Thank you. Just like cross my legs.
No need for the mystery.
All right. So now moving on into the Sean category.
This is movie corner.
Movie corner. So I won Jonathan Guy Greenwood, my personal hero. He's going to score a new Princess Diana biopic that Kristen Stewart is starring in that'll come out later this year. It's interesting because I didn't realize that there was going to be a Diana biopic at all because I know there's stuff going on with like the Netflix miniseries The Crown, which was fantastic.
Yeah. But British royalty shit is very in content-wise.
It really is, especially The Crown is like diving into the deep state of it and stuff. And it's interesting because my mother, shout out Jean, is like a huge royal fan, so she knows all the ins and outs of it, and she was explaining to me a bunch of things I didn't know about Diana. So it's interesting to see it, but then Johnny's going to do the soundtrack is even more interesting because he's done so many different works. I mean, Phantom Thread was one of my favorite soundtracks he ever made. He also did There Will Be Blood, The Master, all Paul Thomas Anderson films. He's also going to be doing Paul Thomas Anderson's upcoming film in 2 years, I like to say. But then it'd be interesting, because he never worked with Pablo Larraín, and it's, since it's a little biopic, it's going to be interesting to see how the soundtrack is on it, and we will definitely dive into it.
I definitely, yeah. I think Johnny Greenwood has been on a run with his film scoring. And I think the Radiohead group altogether have been on a run with their film scoring.
Yeah.
Like, all the, like, pretty much all the members of Radiohead now have, like, produced solo works and...
Film, solo works, collabs with a bunch. Like, they all have shown their individual talent of just how unbelievably good they are. Like, Ed O'Brien was the last one last year where he did EOB album, and there was... so many parts of that album that are just, wow. It's, these guys individually are already masters of their craft, but then you put them together and it's just like reincarnated Jesus.
Counterpoint, so. Weezer did that cover of that one song, Toto, Africa.
Oh, God.
So, that. I mean, there's two different trajectories in which bands can go.
Exactly. So they both start, you know, all right, here we go. It's a sidetrack. You've got white males, privileged white males in their 40s, right? I think Tom might be 50 now, but who knows? Anyway, starting like bands in the 90s. One goes up one way, one goes the other way. I'll make you infer to which one is which.
We report you deciding on your face. You've been pretty consistent from day one on that. But while we're talking about films, I do want to also shout out Haim, who killed it last year with Women in Music Part 3. Absolutely incredible album. We talked about it a lot on the Audio Face Awards.
Paul Thomas Anderson shot that album cover. Like, yes. Fun side note.
It's all in the circle.
It's all in the circle. All in the valley.
So Haim is scoring Netflix's... I'm not going to say Netflix's new animated musical so much as another Netflix animated musical, The Witch Boy. It's based on Molly Knox Ostertag's graphic novel series of the same name. That sounds very
interesting.
Austrian to me. But... yeah, it should be pretty interesting. We're seeing a lot of really cool indie bands actually getting to be tapped up and making film scores. We talked about that interesting Animal Collective SoundCloud rap documentary that we're
getting soon. I'm looking forward to that one, actually. I want to see what happens with that. But it's nice for the Audioface Film Corner because we have a lot this year. Because last year, obviously, 2020, a bunch of other states, we really didn't get to do many films. I think we only did one, really, where we went into soundtrack. Now we have a bunch where we can go into and dive into it. And it's still an untapped corner that I love to go into.
Yeah, I think between all of us, we have the streaming services, so we can...
We can figure it out.
Yeah, should be good. Now that brings time for our last album of this week, this episode, Mad Lib's Sound Ancestors, 16 songs, 41 minutes long. And a little bit on Mad Lib, one of the most prolific rap producers in the game, I would say, known for a number of different productions of like rap things. He also did his own little rap music as like Quasimodo and stuff.
Yeah.
But of course,
his giant alter ego is Quasimodo.
Yeah. Of course, bearing the lead, there's Mad Villainy, which Mad Lib produced, one of the best alternative rap albums.
There's Bandana that came out. That was best album in 2019.
There's Bandana and Pinata. He's produced a couple albums for Freddie Gibbs. But like, he's just a really prolific producer of rap music in a bunch of different places here and there. And this, in a typical Mad Lib collaborator's fashion, is actually like a Mad Lib produced and done kind of project, with the mixing and the last sort of like editing being done by Fortet.
That makes sense. That's right. I forgot it was also done by Fortet. But now that makes sense with a couple of the contexts of the tracks.
Yes.
It's all, there's no lyrics or anything like that. Yeah, it's all just basically really beats, obscure samples. Beats and samples. And there's a lot in here that, there's a couple in here I listen to where I'm like, I really wish Doom was alive, because there's a couple in here. I'm like, I could honestly hear a rap going over this, and it would go so hard.
Theme de Crabtree is definitely one of those.
Yo, where- Theme de Crabtree for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely just things that it's Mad Lib's bread and butter kind of style of production, where it feels a little bit scratchy on purpose, like an old record, but it's just a nice soft beat that's going there. Kind of lo-fi hip-hop beats to relax and study to bread and butter. But yeah, it's especially given the context of the news right now and the passing of Doom, it's very hard to not kind of imagine this being, or aspects of these, even the mind space coming from whatever Mad Villainy 3 is,
yeah,
and whatever Doom might be rapping on. You just kind of want something there. You want kind of some rap there. At the same time, I can see some of these things with Freddie Gibbs or Danny Brown or a number of other rappers,
sure,
for sure. But like, I kind of think it's one of the best things of Madlib is like a beat conductor, as it were, is someone who can make these really insatiable things that rappers just want to jump in on and listeners just want to really hear rappers be on.
And another, like, right after that, you have Road of the Lonely Ones. It's another one where it's just, it's a, such a cool beat and a cool sample and stuff that just loops over and over again. Drums, everything is so simple, but everything is gorgeous and tight-knit, and everything has a purpose into the sound of it as well. Yeah, I can now understand, I can now hear the like the Fortet inspired stuff in there, like, because you got Loose Goose right after that, which is more like into electronic stuff, which everything have Madlib's dived a little bit into, but he hasn't done too much of it. So now you can see like Fortet going into the inspirations of it, and it's such a cool little thing too, of now trying to get into like more glitchiness, more different samples,
yeah,
really chopping up, using electronics for the samples and stuff. It's cool.
Yeah, and there's, again, it's weird because it's instrumental and a lot of it is very varied because Madlib's talented. Mm-hmm. Let's just trust us when we say there's not a ton to say about this album, but it's good. It's soothing to listen to. It's good to have on the background, especially because there's no lyrics. And if you're like one of those aspiring musicians out there who's like a rapper,
this is a thing that I actually want to inspire a younger generation to actually rap on top of. There's a couple things, or to use and sample yourself even. So there's a lot in this album that you can do. You can chop up, you can sample, you can do whatever it is that then you can make your own music with it as well. I think this is a great tool for people because these beats, these samples are amazing. And then you can dive into the sample itself and then pick out something from that sample, or pick out something from the track itself and then sample that. There's a lot of things,
yeah,
you can do. That
clip it, reverb it, remix it. There's so much you can do. And like, that's something that I was thinking about, that this goes to... that gets a good one. This reminds me of Shades of Blue, Madlib Invades Blue Note, or Champion Sound with J-Lib. There's a couple of other projects that Madlib worked on in the early 2000s that are very similar, reminiscent of that, like RJD2, DJ Shadow kind
of
producing cool beats with instrumentals. And you could do a lot with these, but my job is making beats, and I'm just going to have these on. And I just like... so much of my childhood playing like PlayStation 3 on Saturdays is just like have those Pandora stations in the background doing that. And so like, I like that kind of era or that kind of genre of music production that this kind of brings into a new era here. This sounds fresh, it sounds new, but it doesn't need to sound like anything necessarily, because it's also, it's like the theme of the album, Sound Ancestors. So it's a lot of the things from the past as well.
So then the track Sound Ancestors itself is crazy, just with the drums and stuff in it. But yeah, there isn't too much really to dive into because it's all instrumentals. It is, there's a lot to listen to. There's less to listen to in the album. And you can, I just want this to inspire a bunch of people to really try and experiment and do new things.
Yeah.
And hopefully launch some other people up too. It's very good though. Madlib is one of my favorite producers of music.
Yeah, especially in rap.
Yeah,
it's like, it's reminiscent. I'm listening to even Chino near the end. It's like Special Herbs. It's
exactly.
Just fun. I just like this beat. It's a nice, these are, any of these individually could be like palate cleansers on like playlists or just nice things here or there. Underscoring what you said. He's really just one of the better producers out there. The arbitrary scale this week is futuristic theology sponsored space weaponry. And I'm going to use this, the crescent in Islam, because that's actually a moon. It's actually in space. It's a space satellite, which the moon also is, because satellites also refer to actual bodies of space. But this is a man-made satellite, or, you know, Moses-made satellite. And this is shooting two beams, one Sunni, one Shia, directly out of its palms into the universe with planet-destroying energy.
This is... this is a Hindu lightsaber. So it's a lightsaber with that comes out. You turn it on, and then it comes out with six more blades for all the amount of Hindu gods you believe in. It just keeps up pumping out more blades. It just keeps adding on more and more and more and more.
We love the multi. What's the word for when you
polytheistic
polytheistic religions here. Yes. I can't believe...
Wow, I actually outworded Dan for once in my life.
Thank you.
Fucking never
Love that. That's why we have code.
We love to see that.
And the last story. We usually like to end Audio Face on a fun note, but this is not the most fun episode. We talked about a lot of death here. And we're talking about Mad Lib.
As I'm listening to Coffin Nails, the sample of Rap Stitches.
Yeah. speaking of death, Coffin Nails.
that's the best part.
Yeah. Mad Lib was talking about MF Doom in a recent interview, of course, promoting Sound Ancestors, but also, yeah, the album that Mad Lib produced with MF Doom, Mad Villainy, we've talked about it on Audio Face many, many times, as being just like the gold standard of hip-hop music and underground rap music in general. And Mad Lib says he found out like everyone else did on social media, because that's obviously how it goes. His family's very private, so they don't know how to approach... They probably didn't know how to approach that one. I still can't believe that he died. It's weird. We talk like once or twice a year, but that's how it's always been. We talked last year and everything seemed fine. And he kind of talked about his own mortality, which is like a thing we could definitely go into and gone into a lot on Audio Face when he did this motherfucker. You're seeing a lot here. He seemed to be like tight-lipped about the Mad Villainy 3 aspect of things. But
yeah. He probably will be for a long time. I don't think he really wants to do much about it.
Yeah.
And stuff, which is sad, but makes sense.
Yeah, because they took their sweet ass time for a reason. And a part of that is probably like the fact that Mad Lib and Doom are both perfectionists in their music. But sometimes the clock stops. And so ball is in Mad Lib's court. I think now would be too soon. I want him to take his time with it. And I guess he didn't send the other episode. If he never releases it, that's just how it is. But I say like in a year or two, not like so soon you're capitalizing off of like the death or whatever, but with all these other random rappers releasing posthumous albums, we're still getting like posthumous like stuff from the 90s artists who like died. It's out there. Like why, there's no reason that we can't get some posthumous Doom. We know some of those things are out there. We know it'll be like a little bit rougher, but we know it's there. So that'll be good. And hopefully, if we can end Audio Face on somewhat of a lighter good note, this means, not that it means, because there's nothing meant to hear, but hopefully the future holds some unreleased Doom material.
Yes. That we get. That's the hope. That would be nice. The glimmer of hope we have on this Audio Face episode. That's been Audio Face. What does it mean to play us out?
That's been Audio Face for January.
Sorry,
Peter. Beginning of a very long month. Actually, this episode's going to be short. It's just long for editing purposes. Thank you very much for listening. You can find the show, as we said at the top of the show, at AudioFacePod on Twitter, at AudioFacePod on Instagram, at youtube.com/AudioFacePod. Engage with us, interact with us. It helps the show, but it also just helps us know what to listen to and what to keep our ears out for and to be more receptive to y'all, which is why we started the show in the first place. Sean can be found on Twitter at SWSuarez and on Instagram at SWSuarez. I can be found on Twitter, Dan from the Web, and on Instagram at Dan from the Internet. And we will be back next week with another Audio Face. Thank you very much for joining us. Cheers.
Ta-ta for now.
My face is the front of shop. My face is the real shop front. My shop is the fixer front.